Acharya Astutarasattu Sri Sri Manjaya Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki Divine Disappearance Day of Srila Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj ki Divine Disappearance Day of Srila Rasika Nandak ki Tai Gaud Primanandi. Glories to the Assembled Devotees. Glories to the Assembled Devotees. Glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today is a very auspicious and very holy day for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. It's the divine disappearance day of two great acharyas of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya and two very powerful personalities in Krishna consciousness whose preaching and teaching were outstanding. The first one is the personal friend and the previous acharya in our disciplic succession from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. His name was Srila Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. And he was a very interesting and very extraordinary personality. And we'll try to speak a little bit about the glories of this great saint. And also Srila Rasikananda, who came just maybe about 100 years after the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was very instrumental in spreading Krishna consciousness throughout one province in Orissa called Utkala. Utkala is one of the bigger provinces in the area of Orissa, right near Jagannath Puri. And he was empowered by his spiritual master, Shyamananda Prabhu, who was a personal associate of Narottam Das Thakur and Srinivas Acharya, to spread Krishna consciousness. And he was very, very instrumental. Utkala. Karunyanidhi Prabhu. Are you from Utkala? Yes, you're from Utkala. So you are very close to Rasikananda. He is one of the great acharyas. Today we're celebrating his disappearance day. So I wrote the prana mantra for Jagannath Das Babaji on the board, and maybe we can all chant that. Those of you who have service to do as far as taking care of these newsletters, try to also keep your attention on the class while you're doing that. So that's important. This hearing the class and hearing the philosophy is the way we actually purify our consciousness and attain to the transcendental realm. So although we have a service to do, we should keep our attention on the class and our senses engaged in the service. It's like you have to walk a straight line and chew bubble gum at the same time. So you have to learn how to do both. So we'll chant the verse, and please everybody chant this verse. We're asking everyone to do this because this is the prana mantra of Jagannath Das Babaji. Gaura Vibhava Bhume Tva Nirdeshta Sajjana Priyaha Vaishnava Sarvabhoma Sri Jagannathaya Te Namaha Gauravi Baba Bhumestva Nirdishte Sajjana Priyaha Vaishnava Sarvabhoma Sri Jagannathaya Te Namaha Gauravi Baba Bhumestva Nirdishte Sajjana Priya Vaishnava Sarvabhoma Sri Jagannathaya Te Namaha Gauravi Baba Bhumestva Nirdishte Sajjana Priya Vaishnava Sarvabhoma Sri Jagannathaya Te Namaha. Gaura Vibhava Bhumestha
Gaura Vibhava Bhumestva
Anyone else want to join? Please repeat. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Jagannath Das Babaji, who is respected by the entire Vaishnava community, and who discovered the place where Lord Chaitanya appeared. So this is the Pranam Mantra of Jagannath Das Babaji. And I'll read a little bit from this narration about the life of Jagannath Das Babaji. Om Vishnupad Sriman Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj appeared in this world sometime around 1750 AD in a remote village in the subdivision of Tangal in the district of Mayaman Singh in what is now known as Bangladesh. He belonged to a very aristocratic family. It's interesting to note that Jagannath Das Babaji lived an exceedingly long life. He lived, they say, 147 years. He was alive. The Gaudiya Vedanta Acharya Sri Balabhadev Vidyabhushana initiated disciple was Uddhava Das Babaji, and his initiated disciples was Madhusudana Das Babaji, and Jagannath Das Babaji accepted Babaji initiation from Madhusudana Das Babaji Maharaj. According to the Gaudiya Vaishnava Jivana, the Diksha Guru of Jagannath Das Babaji was Jagannanda Goswami of Sringarat, Vrindavan, whose Vaisha Guru was Krishna Das Babaji of Govardhan. Now, sometimes we see on the altar the siblings succession. And of course on our altar, we have Bhakti Vinod Thakur and Korkishore Das Babaji, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, and then His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Sometimes you'll see in the disciplic succession, just before Bhakti Vinod Thakur, is a picture of Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. But don't mistakenly think that Bhakti Vinod Thakur was a disciple of Jagannath Das Babaji. He wasn't. He was a personal friend. And sometimes our disciplic succession is given by the outstanding the outstanding contribution to Gaudiya Vaishnav preaching and efforts in devotional service. So it's not necessarily following one spiritual master to another. The previous person is not necessarily that person's spiritual master. He may be and usually is, but our line is Siksha, and that is the persons who are outstanding in the line of Krishna consciousness are actually the persons who are given the prominence within the disciplic succession. So Jagannath Das Babaji was one such personality. Jagannath Das Babaji performed bhajan in Vrajamandala for many years. He was famed throughout the region as a Siddha Baba, a perfectly realized soul. He was known to sometimes chant continuously for 3 days and nights in a row without sleeping. and he would fast throughout. After the completion of his vow, he would break fast upon flat rice and yogurt prasadam. So here it mentions he chanted 3 days continuously without eating and without sleeping. So, of course, it may be difficult for any of us to try to attempt that particular austerity. But you can see, by this example, 2 things. 1, the determination and power of the great souls. And 2, the power of the holy name of the Lord. That by accepting the holy name in a very dedicated and serious way, we can somehow or other purify our consciousness in a very powerful way. So, devotees are inclined to make vows in Krishna consciousness. One of the recommended processes of Krishna consciousness, as mentioned in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, is that a devotee should make a vow. They should make some vows. In fact, there are certain days for making vows. Janmashtami, or Purnima, Radharani's appearance day. And increase one's devotional efforts by these vows. Taking on more rounds, taking on additional services, taking on additional reading projects. And this making a vow helps to really increase one's Krishna consciousness. We can follow the process, and the process is powerful. But by making an extra effort in Krishna consciousness, and by making vows and sticking to those vows, we actually get the supreme mercy of the Lord. So it's important to do such things, to make vows, especially vows when it comes to chanting. Recommended vows is that I will chant every day 16 rounds straight without doing anything. That's one vow you can do. It's easy. Sometimes we chant 3-4 rounds and we get tired and we go somewhere else and put our beats down and we do something else. And then after a while we chant 3 or 4 more and we pick them up. I mean, that's okay. But sit down and chant 16 rounds straight, and it's very difficult because the mind gets restless. But the key to success in Krishna consciousness is learning how to keep the mind under control, because the mind is the composite of all the desires within the heart, and the mind wants to lead us everywhere and anywhere constantly in different directions. At every moment throughout the day, the mind is dragging us. So these vows are extra pillars of spiritual advancement that can really help us to control the mind. Of course, we make a vow, chant 16 rounds every day, follow the 4 regulative principles, don't eat anything but Krishna prasadam. These are vows, which are part of the process. But making an extra vow, we get the special mercy of the Lord. And by getting that special mercy, then we can increase nicely in our Krishna consciousness. In the year 1880, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur visited Babaji Maharaj's lotus feet in Vrindavan and got many valuable instructions from him. In the 1880s, the Paramahansa Babaji came to the district of Burdwan, staying in the village of Amalajoda. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur went there on the pretext of government business, thereby obtaining the association of Jagannath Babaji for the second time. The Babaji was delighted by Bhaktivinoda Thakur's enthusiasm for preaching the glories of the holy name of Krishna. Thereafter, Jagannath Das Babaji sojourned in Burdwan for 11 days and performed uninterrupted kirtan. In the year 1893, that means when he was 143 years old, Jagannath Das Babaji was residing in Kulia, Navadvip, and he went to see Sarabi Kunj, the residence of Thakur Bhaktivinoda. The entire grove was electrified by his arrival and appeared especially beautiful. Later, together with his followers, he proceeded to Mayapur and visited many holy places like Yoga Peeth, Srila Sangha, etc. Who knows the importance of Srila Sangha? What is the importance of Srila Sangha? Who is the...
Ah,
yes. Every night, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his most intimate disciples would engage in Harinam Sankirtan in the house of Srivas. So there's a place right on the road, right near our temple in Mayapur. Not more than... How far is it from the temple, the Srivas Sangha? Half a mile. Only a half a mile from the temple on the same road as the place where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to perform his Sankirtan every night. It's a very small place. One time we went there with 400 devotees in that little room. The room is, I mean, it can hold, it holds about maybe, you could squeeze in 100. We had 400. And we were having kirtan in the room. It was quite interesting. People were dancing on top of each other. Of course, Srivas Sangha has a special shakti to it, being the place where Lord Chaitanya. When he arrived at the birthplace of Sri Gaur, which had later been discovered by Bhakti Vinod, he began to dance in ecstasy, although he was very old at the time and had previously been thought unable to walk. He thus established the authenticity of the Sai Dhyan Dao. He spent some time at the yoga pit in the association of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he miraculously cured one of the Thakur's sons of a skin disease simply by telling him to lie down in the dust of the Lord's place of appearance. You can see the power of the Holy Dham. Simply by lying and taking the dust of the Holy Dham, one can become cured of ordinary diseases. What to speak of getting cured of the material disease. This is a very interesting pastime. Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur had declared the place of Lord Chaitanya's birth, the Yoga Peak. But many people still had some doubt whether that was the actual place. Jagannath Das Babaji was carried by his servant in a basket. He was so old, he had to be carried. He couldn't even walk. When he came to the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, not knowing the place, he immediately jumped out of his basket and leaped high in the air and started chanting, Jai Satchinandana, Jai Satchinandana. He was chanting the holy name of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, son of Mother Sachi. And it explains that he was jumping so high that people were seeing the bottom of his feet by looking up. And he was very old, 143 years old. He was a big person. He was very big. He had a very huge body. He passed most of the time chanting the holy names on the banks of the Ganges. His bhajan kutir and samadhi are still there. One day he asked Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur to construct a veranda to shelter the devotees who came to see him. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was well versed in astronomy at the age of 12. Hearing of this, Babaji summoned him one day and instructed him to make a Vaishnav calendar, which would include the appearance and disappearance of all the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Vishnu Priya Thakurani. Accordingly, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati made the necessary calculations and began publication of Sri Navadvipa Panchika. We all know that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj was probably one of the greatest Vaishnava astrologers, one of the greatest astrologers in the history of Eastern astrology. There's two schools of astrology. There's Eastern astrology and there's Western astrology. One is governed by the moon and one is calculated by the sun. So we do our calculations according to the Eastern, and that is the moon, the cycle of the moon. Jagannath Das Babaji's life and soul was chanting the holy name and rendering service to the Vaishnava. Although he was almost bent double in his old age, still during the time of his kirtan, his body would expand to well over 6 feet, and his appearance would replicate the dancing figure of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If you see his picture of him, he's always bent over. But when he was dancing, he would just stretch like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very big. He was over 7 feet tall, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And his arms would reach down to his knees. He had a very big body. That helps to command respect also. He used that as a way of preaching. His favorite disciple was Bhagavad Das Babaji, who accepted initiation from him. Gaurakishore Das Babaji took Babaji initiation from Sri Bhagavad Das Babaji. Gaurhari Das Babaji, Ramahari Das Babaji, and Nityananda Das Babaji were disciples of Jagannath Das Babaji, who came from Barsana in Brajamandala. So who knows what is Barsana? What is the importance of the holy place of Barsana? Barsana. You know everything. You are the Vaishnav scholar. Well, go ahead. You can speak. I don't mean to cut you off. It's the holy place of Srimati Radharani. It's Barsandam. We sing that song. What is that? Sri Varshavana Vijay. No, I'm sorry. What is that song? Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhano Suti Devi Panamami Hini Priya. Sri Varshavanavi Devi. That's something else. But the holy land of Barsan is the place, the appearance of Srimati Radharani. If you ever go to Vrindavan, go to India, please go to Barsana. It's very, very beautiful. It's a little distance away from Vrindavan. And the temples are high up. You have to climb up maybe 100, 200 stairs. And the stairs are like, they're not like, just like straight. They're more like on an incline. So there's like going straight up almost. The stairs are very difficult. But when you get up to the very top, there's one beautiful temple called Sriji Mandir. You been to Sriji Mandir? Sriji Mandir?
Sriji?
Yeah. And on top of the hill on Barsana is one temple, Sriji. Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful temple. Deity of Radharani, Krishna, Radha and Krishna there. Every day, you come to the temples in India, the temples in the morning are always crowded. There's so many people. People are always coming to the holy places every day to see the deity, worship the Lord like that. When we went this time, I spent 2 days at Barsana. And we were there, we had the most amazing kirtans. The best kirtans we had was at Sriji Mandir in Barsana. Everybody was just so enlightened just by being in that place of Radharani's birthplace. Special, special mercy. Another disciple called Krishna Das Babaji was from Kamdakandi. Sri Jagannath Das Babaji's Maharaj's personal servant and disciple, Sri Biharilal Das, was very stout and powerful. Due to Babaji Maharaj's advanced age, he could apparently not walk. Sri Biharilal used to carry him everywhere on his shoulder in a bamboo basket. He would carry his guru Maharaj. Once, when he was traveling, a wealthy man gave him a rupee, which was deposited with Babaji Maharaj's servant, Bihari. After journeying for some miles, Sri Babaji Maharaj had his servant take him back to the donor, and he returned his one rupee to the man. He told the man, "I understand that you have a good deal of money. I could not bear the burden of one rupee. I wonder how you can tolerate the burden of so many." So he was explaining to have wealth is like a burden. You have so many cares and concerns and problems when you have wealth. Babaji Maharaj sometimes accepted donations for rendering service to the Vaishnavas, but in this instance he instructively exhibited his detachment, showing how one must be wary of accepting charity from pounds, shilling, and pence class of men. People, sometimes people who give money Of course, we accept money in order to use it for Krishna service. But a lot of times people give money in the wrong way, wrong consciousness. They give money because they want to be known as a person who is a person who gives money to charity. They want to be recognized, they want their name on a plaque, they want some distinction. They want to be known as a nice guy or a nice girl. So, of course, the great souls, they can see that. When a person is giving out of pride or out of some personal motivation, they can see right through that. Mm-hmm. They don't appreciate that. Because when you give, the idea is to give in order to please the person you want to give. And not because you want something from that. So the idea is charity should be given without any personal motivation. I give because I can assist you in your mission. I don't want anything from that giving. I want the opportunity to give. Simply give me the opportunity to give or the opportunity to serve. And my pleasure is in the giving and not in receiving something from that. Inspired by Bihari Lal, the villagers of Suryakund built a room in a small temple for Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. The Siddha Baba asked Bihari Lal to install a deity in the temple. Upon receiving this order, Bihari proceeded to Sonarudi village, which was about 8 miles from Katoa. He requested a local landowner to give him a deity. He duly received Gaur Nittai deities, went to Calcutta and collected donations totaling 5,000 rupees from Srinath Rai, the renowned Laha families, and others. He then returned to Suryakund. With great pomp and festivity, the deities of Sri Gaur Nittai were installed in the temple, where they glistened like gold. Shortly thereafter, a band of dacoits stormed the temple one night and attempted to carry away the deities, thinking them to be actually fashioned from gold. However, they were unsuccessful in attempting to purloin those gold lords and fell exhausted in the temple. They fled without achieving their aim just before the arrival of dawn. This incident disturbed Balaji Maharaj greatly, and he told Bihari Das to donate the deity to some devotee in Vrindavan. Bihari Das went to Vrindavan town and presented them to a Goswami of Bengal extraction. These deities are still being worshipped in the temple of Bhogiyati of Gopal Bagh, and are famous by the name Sonagora, that is, the Golden Gore. Several days after this incident, Srila Babaji Maharaj told Bihari, "I cannot live without the deities. Bring another deity from wherever you can find one." Hearing his Guru Maharaj's command, Bihari proceeded to Radhakund and met Sri Denu Das Babaji of Mathura. There in Radhakund, in a stack of hay which had been gathered for feeding the cows, they discovered a deity of Sadbuj. So who knows what is the Sadbuj deity? Who can tell him? Mother Tina, what is Sadbuj? You know that particular form of the Lord? It's called the Sadbuj form of deity. No. We will not hold you against it. Anyone know what is Sadbuj? Who knows? Anyone? Harari? Vivek, you know what Sadbuj is?
I know.
You're about to learn. Sadbuj is a very, very interesting deity.
Lord Ramchandra.
Lord Ram.
Krishna.
And Krishna.
And
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's three forms of the Lord in one. Deity is Krishna in Vrindavan, Lord Ramachandra, and Lord Chaitanya, all in one. Six arms, two arms holding a flute, that's Krishna plays a flute, two arms, one holding a bow and arrow, and two arms, one holding a tridanda, staff, and a begging bowl, the marks of a sannyasi. Two of the arms are bluish, black. Two of the arms are greenish, and two of the arms are golden. And the face is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, right?
Isn't it?
Or is it Krishna?
Chaitanya.
It's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the face, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu manifested that form. Who knows? Okay, we'll give some harder questions now. Who knows where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu manifested that form? He did it two different times. Can you remember? Anybody know which two times or one of the two times? He did it. He showed it at Jagannath Puri to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya when he wanted to reveal him his transcendental form. And it's the first time. He did it before that. Was in the house of Srivas, Srivasanga. He had revealed it to Lord Nityananda. No, I'm sorry, that's wrong. He revealed the six-armed form of Lord Vishnu to Lord Nityananda. It wasn't the Sadbhuj form. It was another six-armed form. Nandanacharya's house. But that was the Vishnu form. It wasn't the... I'm actually incorrect. It was the six-armed form of Lord Vishnu he revealed, not the Sadbhuj form. Sadbhuj form, he only revealed it once to Sarvabhauma. That was the only time. There's one devotee who lives in New Jersey. His whole house has pictures of Sadbhuj everywhere. In other words, he has so many, he's collecting pictures from different deities of Sadbhuj around the world. It's a beautiful, beautiful deity. When I was traveling, I saw one deity of Sadbhuj. If you can see a big deity or a nice picture of it, it's very, very attractive. With the passing of a decade, Jagannath Das Babaji was inspired to go to Navadvipa, and he therefore requested Bihari Lal to deliver the deity to someone in Vrindavan. Bihari Das was preceded to Vrindavan and gave the deity to the head priest of Gopal Guru Ashram, who was known as Sri Narottam Das Babaji. The Lord in his six-armed form is worshipped to this day in Sajapur Temple, situated in a lane near Nidavan. For those of you who are lovers of animals, there's a beautiful story in the life of Jagannath Das Babaji. Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, sometimes he would sit there and take his prasadam, and all these dogs would come around. And when the dogs would come around to take his prasadam, he would be taking his food off his plate, and he would give it to the dogs, like that. So one time, his servant, Bihari Lal, was thinking, these dogs are just annoying my spiritual master. So he started to chase the dogs away. So when Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj sat down to take prasadam, he was wondering, the dogs always come. Where are they? So he called Bihari Lal, what happened to the dogs? And then he explained in a very humble way that he was feeling it was bothering his Guru Maharaj, so he chased him away. Jagannath Das Babaji said, then I will not take prasad. If the dogs of the Dham cannot be giving prasad, then I should not also eat. He said, bring back the dogs. And he brought back the dogs. So he was very merciful to the... These were dogs of the Dham. That means they were not ordinary dogs. Dham dogs, dogs that are... Many of them have been maybe great souls in their previous birth, and due to some unusual situation were forced to, again, take birth in the Dham and reap the benefits of being in the Dham, but they were forced to take birth in a dog's body. Just like if you go to Vrindavan, and there's many hogs and dogs there. They simply eat the garbage on the street. They eat stool, they eat garbage, they eat everything that people don't eat. They stick their face in the gutters. And the gutters in India are not like the gutters in America. The gutters in India will make the gutters in America look like... The gutters in America look like spotless, pure, pristine places compared to the gutters in India. The gutters in India are just like... And they're everywhere. You have to watch out, you don't fall in. One of the benefits of... Many people tour India, and they, unless they actually have some spiritual vision, they can't, they never go back again. You have to have spiritual vision to stay in India.
So sometimes these dogs and hogs, they're actually great personalities in their previous birth, and they were living in the Dham before, but they became attached to sense gratification. They got involved in sex life. Prabhupada said, if you have sex life in the Dham, in a holy place, and then you're forced and you may have to take one birth again in the Dham in order to suffer in that body. Sex life means suffering. Basically, the scriptures give clear and that the living entity increases his suffering simply by the process of sex life. So even the great souls, when they perform that activity in the holy Dham, in the next life they take birth as hogs and dogs. But they have to finish up their business in this material world in that body, and then at the end of that birth, they get a chance to go back home, back to Godhead. It's a little message. Okay. There's a wonderful, I don't want to spend the whole class on Jagannath Das Babaji because I'd like to speak a little bit about Rasikananda. But there's a wonderful story that I'm trying to find. Okay. While he was staying in Navadvip, he became the object of great affection and acclaim. On one occasion, the famous landlord, Srinath Rai, and several family members went to have audience with this most famous sailing person. Not recognizing him, they asked him if they knew where the famous Siddha Baba lived. In other words, they asked Babaji, where is Babaji? They didn't know who he was. Srila Babaji Maharaj replied, I don't know anyone who is a Siddha Baba living here. I'm staying here, but I'm simply an ordinary living entity like all of you. The Rai then realized that they were actually addressing Srila Babaji Maharaj, who is completely free from any desire for recognition or fame. Nevertheless, they humbly requested him to show them a miracle. Sometimes people, they go to a holy man and they want to see some miracle. One time, Prabhupada, this happened in the life of Prabhupada. They said to Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada, he's with reporters. Can you show us some miracle, some of your powers? Prabhupada said, yes, I can show you a miracle. And he pointed to all his devoted disciples. He says, these are my miracles. They used to be addicted to so many bad habits. Now they're chanting Hare Krishna. They're living a very pure and clean life. He said, this is the actual miracle, to change hippies into happies. In other words, to change those who are so attached to sinful life and make them actually great, great personalities. That is the miracle. So, they humbly request him to show him a miracle. Becoming disturbed, the Babaji declared, I don't know how to perform any miracles. He then picked up a stick and started beating the ground, apparently out of annoyance. The landlord, fearful that he had committed an offense, begged the Babaji not to be angry with them for having made an unpleasant request. Srila Jagannath Das Babaji replied, I am not angry with you. I'm just chasing out a goat who is eating the tulsi plant near the college of Sri Lokanath Goswami at Radhakund. The Rai was much astonished to hear this, and to test the veracity of the statement, they immediately sent a reply telegram to Radhakund. The reply came back the following day, and it confirmed that a goat had entered the cottage of Srila Lokanath Das Goswami and ruined the tulsi plant there. This incident convinced many doubting persons of Babaji's perfection. They returned to see him and fell at his feet to offer obeisances. Perfect devotees of the Lord, being disinterested in the material universe, never desire to make an exhibition of miraculous powers. In order to increase the faith of worldly creatures, however, they are sometimes inspired by the indwelling Godhead to perform some super mundane deed for their edification. So devotees have powers, but they don't exhibit their powers. Just like one time Srila Prabhupada was sitting at a deity installation ceremony, and the devotees had just built a makeshift altar, and the new deities of Radha Nandanishwara were just about to be installed. So they made this altar, and there was big, heavy wooden columns that they had propped up. So just prior to the installation program, they were about to open the curtains, and Prabhupada was sitting in the front row, and he noticed that the altar was collapsing. Big, giant, heavy columns were about to fall on the devis. So Prabhupada immediately got up and he ran. And just when the columns were ready to crash down on the devis, he grabbed him with his arms and he held him up. The devotees couldn't believe it afterwards when they saw Prabhupada exhibiting this powerful, this amazing strength. Even Prabhupada was like 70-something years old. This is a little tiny person. Prabhupada was no bigger than Braj Kishore. He was about the same size. Little guy, you know. Bengalis are not very big. If you go to Bengalis, they're all little guys, you know. They can eat a lot of rice, but they're very, very small. But when they dance and chant, you can't beat the Bengalis for chanting and dancing. They can outdance you and outchant you, make you look like a fool. They can dance high speed for hours at a time, right, Braj Kishore? Hours at a time, they dance high speed. And you go to Mayapur, the Sundar Arti is about 50, 60, sometimes 100, more than 100. All these Bengali brahmacharis, and they get into this kirtan. I was exhausted. I used to be exhausted. Just looking forward to that kirtan was my whole life. I would just wait for the 7 o'clock kirtan. 6:30 it starts in Mayapur. Usually goes from 6:30 to about 8, the kirtan. It's about an hour and a half. And then they have sometimes 2 or 3 leaders. But it's the most amazing kirtan. Everybody gets into it. Everybody just gets into it. The temple room is big. And it's like 2 temples in one, and everybody's circulating and dancing. And unless you're physically fit or spiritually fired up, you can't stay with these kirtans. And they're so amazing. The only Westerner that I could see that we used to really stay with these devotees was Bhakti Marg Maharaj. Have you ever seen Bhakti Marg Maharaj? He used to come to Mayapur. He would always dance in the kirtans. He would come to the 7 o'clock hour. Bhakti Marg Maharaj is a big guy. He's big. He's got all these little Bengalis about half his size around him, you know. They're all dancing around him, you know. He's dancing and dancing and dancing and dancing and dancing. So Prabhupada, he simply grabbed that pillar that was about to fall on the deities. He held it up. And then the devotees came and took it from Prabhupada. It took 2 or 3 devotees to hold that pillar. Prabhupada was holding it by himself. It was a big, giant wooden pillar. Prabhupada, he was powerful. But he wouldn't exhibit his power. He would keep it. That's the way, that is pretty much, a devotee of the Lord never exhibits their transcendental powers because they don't want to make a show. The sahajiyas, those who have, or the yogis, they want to make a show of devotional service. So in order to attract the attention of others, they put on some exhibition and call it devotional service in order to attract people. There's one yogi in South India. He's got a large following in many places in the world. He's very fond of manifesting things within his hand. He can simply manifest, he'll go like this, he'll open his hand and there'll be a rascool in his hand, rascula. Or if you want some gold, he can produce gold from his hand, or ashes, whatever you want. Sai Baba. I didn't want to mention his name. And some people think he's God. They say, oh, he's actually Bhagavan. But actually, his followers, you know, say he's God. And of course, he doesn't stop them. But actually, he never claims to be God. He just goes along with the idea. And people say, because Westerners don't understand what is real spirituality. We don't really have much of an understanding of what is spirituality. If a person has some mystic power, they think that person's spiritual. But what is mystic power? The demons had mystic power. Even demons. Ravana had mystic power. And Maya Donovan was the king of mystic power. He could bring back to life the demons when they were being killed by the demigods. He created a lake of nectar. And he, when the demons were killed, he would put the demon in a lake of nectar and they would come back to life. Not only back to life, but they would come back to life with such exuberance, and such power, that they would be even stronger than they were before. So this was a demon. He had the power to create these things. So mystic powers don't indicate anything godly. Mystic power means you know how to control the material energy. You know how the material energy works. And you have the power. It's a science. If you know the science, just like if you know the science of any science that's taught in school, you can develop that science for a certain purpose. So mystic power is just simply a science. That's all it is. It has nothing to do with anything spiritual. But yogis and sahajis and others, they want to develop it so they attract some following. Then they have a big following, and then people say they're a god or some incarnation. They give them all their money, and what happens? They get cheated. Cheaters? Not cheaters. Prabhupada said, every day one incarnation of God is coming from India to America. And Americans don't know, Westerners don't know. When I was in New Vrindavan, just about 2 years ago, there were some people circulating one flyer that there was the incarnation of Kalki Avatar has come. They were soliciting on New Vrindavan's property. They came with these flyers that Kalki Avatar has come, and he's in Pittsburgh. I don't know why Kalki Avatar chose Pittsburgh, but he was in Pittsburgh. And he was there. Come and see Kalki Avatar. Well, the Kalki Avatar is not due for another, how many thousands of years? 427,000 more years. Huh? 427. We're 5,000 years into Kali Yuga. So 400, and he rides on a white horse, carries a sword, and he simply cuts off the heads of all the demons. That's his activities. So according to some people, Kalki Avatar is here. So you see, we get a lot of this. This is quite common. And there's these yogis that can touch your eyeballs with their fingers and you can experience the white light. You get the Brahman bliss. Or you get some Leela of Krishna and Vrindavan in your mind. Or some bells ring, or some lights go off. And your body starts to tingling and all of a sudden you feel, oh, he's God. You know, so Prabhupada, this is all cheap magicians. A good magician. You know Houdini? Houdini? He was one of the greatest magicians in the history of magic. They used to lock him in a box, throw him in the ocean, and then they'd come out and he would be somewhere else. He knew the science. They have these cheap magicians. When they put a rabbit in a hat, they have a little compartment in a hat. So you can't see the compartment. So when the rabbit comes, oh, rabbit out of a hat. That's third class magician. But there's some really good magicians. They can simply bring a rabbit from anywhere by their mystic power. They can call a rabbit to come into the hat. That's mystic power. Houdini was one such personality. He studied the Vedas, actually. Houdini had some knowledge of Vedic science. So all this is in the Vedas, but it's not spiritual. It's just higher forms of material manipulation. That's all. So devotees are not impressed by such. And nor do devotees who have powers like that exhibit such powers. When I was in New Vrindavan, there was this one mystic yogi. He came one time. It was in the dead of winter. It was like the coldest time of the year, big snowstorms. And he came with his wife. They were both young. And he wanted to show the devotees his power of mystic. He wanted to put on a display. He was kind of proud of it. So we were thinking we should give him some chance to. So he had a little private darshan with some of the leading devotees in the community. So he did his display. So he took a light bulb, and he took the light bulb in his hand and made powder out of it. Went like this and just made it into powder. And then he went into a little trance, and he told them, he said, after I go into trance, check my pulse. So he went into trance, and they checked his pulse. There was no pulse. It means clinically you're dead if you don't have any pulse. But he was able to stop his heartbeat. So, you know, he was thinking. And so he was doing all this stuff. And the devotees were just saying, yeah, yes, very nice. Nobody was really impressed by it. So then he got a piece of rebarb and he bent a rebarb. Rebarb is corrugated steel they use for construction. He just bent it, you know, like it was a piece of paper or something. It was powerful. So, but nobody was impressed. But when his wife called him, poo, he ran. So she had more power than he did. She was able to control him. So one time he wanted to show his exhibition of power. So he said, tomorrow, you get in your car and I'll hold the bumper of the car. You start the car and drive away and I'll hold the car back. So he wanted to do that. But it was snowing out, so the car didn't have much traction. So nobody really cared for that exhibit so much. So these yogis, they do it. So who cares about it? You know, powdering light bulbs. His wife could have powdered him in a minute, you know. She was just summoning him every minute. Come, he would run. So we understood that she had more mystic power than he did. Anyway, these are the activities of the people in the material world. So, in Krishna consciousness, devotees who have were devotees, they actually have all mystic power, but they don't use it because it's not necessary. Unless there's some need. If there's some need, a devotee can exhibit some power. But that power will come from Krishna when it's needed. It's not that devotees practice these different programs. If you read the 11th canto, in the middle of the 11th canto, there's a whole chapter. I don't recall the name of the chapter, but it talks about how to develop mystic power. There are 8 primary mystic powers, and there are 10 secondary mystic powers. There are 18 mystic powers. The primary ones is one can become lighter than the lightest. You can become weightless. One can become smaller than the smallest. Yogis can go through keyholes, Prabhupada said. You lock them in a room and they come out the keyhole. They can become heavier than the heaviest. They can become like a ton of weight. They can walk on water. It's like Jesus Christ, he walked on water. Oh, why did he do that? Just simply to increase the faith of the faithless, that's all. That's all. To increase the faith of the faithless. Why did he raise Lazarus from the dead? Increase the faith of the faithless, that's all. It's not such a big thing. Maya Donovan was raising demons from the dead every moment. So it's not a big thing. So this mystic power is there. One can learn the science and develop mystic power. But simply by becoming Krishna conscious, one can develop all necessary powers. Okay, so we're reading about Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. So these are some of the major stories surrounding his life. Again, he lived quite old. He was 147 years old. Srila Jagannath Das Babaji used to say that the best time for chanting was from 3 o'clock in the morning until 7 o'clock in the morning. And again from sunset until 11 o'clock at night. He declared that no serious-minded devotee should sleep during these hours. As Lord Shiva comes to inspect the devotees of his spiritual master, Lord Krishna, at those times. So Shiva travels to make sure One is. So he said, between 3 and 7 is the best time for chanting, japa. And from, what is that? From sunset until 11 o'clock at night, these two times are good for chanting. Of course, Prabhupada recommended early in the morning, the best time. Serious devotees get their rounds done early. If you really want to be serious in Krishna consciousness, though it says 16 rounds each day, best to get your rounds done earlier. You'll find that your whole spiritual life is more, much more easier to execute. Your day flows much more better if you wait during the day to chant your rounds. You find you can't do as much during the day, and at the same time your rounds are not as good. So the ideal time is to chant early in the mornings. So we have this temple here in Chicago, Nusseva Kunj, is one of the best temples for facilitating japa chanting. We have exactly 2 full hours to chant the holy name. In many other temples, they don't have so much time. Sometimes some temples have 1 hour and 15 minutes, some temples have 1 hour and a half. We have 2 hours. So it's 2 hours, you can, even if you're slow, you can at least chant 14 rounds in 2 hours, 12 to 14 rounds. And that's pretty much most of your rounds. You'll find your whole day goes better if you simply dedicate your life to chanting nice, early and nicely. Those are the best times for chanting. Okay, any questions on Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj? Any comments? Anything? Shankar Pandit Prabhu, do you have anything to add? Okay. Today was also the disappearance day of Rasikananda Prabhu. And I don't know if we have time. But Rasikananda, I'll just mention a few things, and maybe tonight for Bhagavad Gita class we can dedicate to glorifying this great soul. He practically made the entire province of Utkal Krishna conscious. That means thousands and hundreds and thousands of people became Krishna conscious by Rasikananda. Rasikananda was a disciple of Shyamananda Prabhu, who was a personal associate of Narottam Das Thakur and Srinivasacharya. And I believe, was he a disciple of Chaitanya? What was his name? The one who was a disciple of Gauridas Pandit. What was his name? Gauridas Pandit's main disciple. When Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda jumped into his heart, Hriday Chaitanya. Was he a disciple of Hriday Chaitanya, Shyamananda? Yes, he was. Ah, yes, I remember the story now. Because Hriday Chaitanya sent him to Jiva Goswami to get instructions, and then he came back with a strange-looking tilak on his head, and he said, "Where did you get that tilak?" And he couldn't tell him, because he got the tilak from Radharani, and Radharani told him not to tell. So he didn't say it. So he became angry at his disciple, and he started to beat him. He went, "Disobey my instructions, you have given up your guru." Bogus. So Shyamananda didn't say anything. He just took the beating from his spiritual master as his mercy. Although Radharani told him personally not to tell. And then that night in the dream, Radharani appeared to Hriday Chaitanya and explained the whole story. And later on he apologized to his disciple. So he was a disciple of Hriday Chaitanya. And Shyamananda was one of the most powerful acharyas. And he had his favorite disciples was Rasikananda. Rasikananda was so powerful that he actually, one of his main disciples was an elephant. An elephant. It was a mad elephant. You know what mad elephants are? They're pretty wild creatures. They can destroy villages, they can destroy anything. So this one elephant was so mad, he was just destroying everything. So one king, Ahmed Roy, he said, he heard about Rasikananda and his power. He said, "If he can tame this elephant, then I'll accept him as a great soul." So, one day, the elephant came charging into the area where Rasikananda and all his disciples were. And the elephant was running at high speed. He was coming right towards the place where all his disciples just ran. And he stood there in the path of the elephant. The elephant was coming right at him. He stood there right at him. When the elephant got right near him, he just put up his hand, the elephant stopped. And he started chastising the elephant. He said, "Why are you causing so much problem? Why are you destroying so many things? Why don't you behave yourself? Why don't you become a nice elephant?" He started to chastise him. And the elephant just started to sit down and listen to his chastisement. And then the elephant started to become a little bit emotional. He started to shed tears. He was getting chastised by Rasikananda. So he realized the elephant became a little humble, so he showed his mercy on him. And he initiated the elephant. He gave him the name Gopal. Gopal the elephant. And then he told him, "You go out and stop making all this mischief and try to make other elephants, make them Krishna conscious too." So he had a disciple called Gopal. It was an elephant. It was a mad elephant. It became tame. It became completely pacified. This was the power of Rasikananda. Simply by his mercy, an elephant became, a wild elephant became a devotee. And that elephant used to come back and see him. He would visit him regularly just to report to his guru. Okay. So I don't want to be a mad elephant in the way of prasadam here. So I'll get out of the way. Thank you very much for your kind attention. All glories to Srila Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. All glories to Srila Rasikananda Prabhu. All glories to His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada.
So these things are happening right now to prepare for the most auspicious and most holy day of the appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. More than any holy day of the year, we give great respect and honor to this particular day because it is a day where we connect with the essence of our whole teachings and philosophy and practice. So we'll read a little bit from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhaktivrindam. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhaktivinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhaktivinda. Continuation Madhya Lila, Chapter 6, Text 85 and 86, is entitled Liberation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Yadyapi jagat guru tumi shastra gyanavan prithivite nahi pandit kumara samana ishvarera kripalesha nahi kas tomate ateve ishvara tatva napara janite.
Gopinath Acharya then addressed Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. You are a great scholar and a teacher of many disciples. Indeed, there is no other scholar like you on earth. Nonetheless, because you are bereft of even a pinch of the Lord's mercy, you cannot understand him, even though he is present in your home. Gopinath Acharya is criticizing his uncle, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He criticizes him in a nice way. He says, you are a great scholar. You are the best in the earth. But even though you have so much scholastic ability and learning, what is the use? Because the Lord is in your own home and you cannot even recognize him. So it's quite interesting that he criticizes him in such a way as to make him realize that what's the use of all my scholarship if I don't understand that in my own house God is sleeping?
Tumara nahiha dosha shetra ekahe pandidaya ye vishwa apra gyanaka bunahe.
It is not your fault. It is the verdict of the scriptures. You cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead simply by scholarship. Purport. This is a very important verse. Even big scholars cannot understand Krishna, yet they dare comment on Bhagavad Gita. Reading Bhagavad Gita means understanding Krishna. Yet we actually see many scholars making blunders in trying to understand Krishna. Gopinath Acharya's statement is confirmed in many places in the Vedic literatures. In the Katha Upanishads, it is said, Nayam atma pavatinena labhyo na medaya na bhavana srutena yam evaisha vinuti tena labhyas tasyaifu atma vivinuti tanushram. So who knows that verse? You know? Raj Kapinda? What is translation? Prabhupada doesn't give the translation.
Right.
Yeah. This verse says that not by great hearing, large amounts of hearing, nor by great intelligence, nor by studying the scriptures can you understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You can only understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead when he reveals his transcendental form to you. And when does he do that? When he's pleased with your devotional service. So the endeavor for Krishna consciousness is the endeavor to please the Lord. That is the key to understand Krishna. Also in the Katha Upanishad it says, Naisa tarkena mati ape naya, proktane eva sunajaya prasta, yam tvam apa satya vritya vastasi, tradrindo buyan achiketa prasta. The fact is that the Supreme Personality of God, the Super Soul, cannot understand simply by explanations, logic, or erudite scholarship. One cannot understand him simply by one's brain substance. Even by studying all Vedic literature, one cannot understand the Supreme Lord. However, if one is slightly favored by the mercy of the Lord, if the Lord is pleased, one can understand him. But who are the candidates eligible to receive the mercy of the Lord? Only the devotees. They alone can understand what is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord reveals himself to the sincere devotees when he is pleased with his service. Swayam eva sparatada. One should not try to understand the Lord simply by the statements of the Vedas, nor should one uselessly attempt to decry these statements through reasoning and logic. So here it's explained that one should try to please the Lord. How do we please the Lord? What is the means for pleasing the Lord? Do you buy him a car? Huh? Love and devotion, but how is that shown? By rendering service, exactly. By rendering devotional service to the Lord, in the mood of devotion, well, in the mood of love and devotion, we please Krishna.
Krishna is not pleased by scholarship, great learning, one's birth, whatever one's qualification, simply by trying to love Krishna. And how do you love Krishna? By serving Krishna. You can't love anyone unless you serve them. Service is a form of expression of one's love. And you write, when you love someone, you do something for them. And that is natural. So Krishna makes it easy to buy the beauty. He says, just offer me a leaf, a flower, some fruit, and some water with love, and I will accept. He makes it very easy in the sense that he doesn't ask for much. He just asks for these little simple things which are easily available. But he wants these things offered with love. And that is the key to understanding Krishna. When Duryodhana cooked a big feast and invited Krishna, he had a grand, grand celebration, a huge ceremony. And he wanted to invite Krishna to try to get Krishna to be on his side, of course. But he performed this wonderful feast for Krishna, inviting so many singers and dancers and dramatists. It was a grand celebration, and Krishna was the guest of honor. He invited Krishna. Krishna didn't go. He went to Vidura's house instead, and when he arrived at Vidura's house, Vidura's wife, she was so embarrassed, she wasn't even ready for Krishna. She just ran looking for something to offer to Krishna. She found a banana. She peeled a banana, and her excitement to give something to Krishna. It's like, imagine if Krishna walks into your house, what would you do? What would you do if Krishna walked into your house? Say, well, I'm busy right now. I'll be back later. I gotta go take my driving test. No. You say, welcome Krishna in, and you sit down, and you offer him, and you massage his feet, you offer some food, you offer your obeisances, you offer some prayers, you ask, how can you serve? So Vidura's wife, she was so excited to see Krishna that in her excitement of devotion, she peeled the banana, she threw away the banana and gave Krishna the peel. And what did Krishna do? He ate the peel. He was so happy to receive her love. Krishna doesn't need the banana or the peel. He's interested in the love. And when he saw her love, he was immediately attracted. So he simply accepted her offering, although it wasn't a suitable offering. So that's the key. The key is love. Of course, we try to offer Krishna nice things. But when there's love is there, that is the key. That is the actual key. So someone asked Srila Prabhupada one time, what pleases you the most? And I remember this was in 1975 in Atlanta, Georgia. Prabhupada was there. And devotees from all over the country had come to see Prabhupada. And there was big crowds. And Prabhupada was preaching very strongly, giving nice classes and lectures. And someone asked Prabhupada, what pleases you the most? Prabhupada said, if you love Krishna. So the whole idea of Krishna consciousness is teaching us how to love Krishna. How do we awaken our love for Krishna? What is that love? That love is natural. So when you love somebody, what do? You serve them. You think about them. You chant their name. You constantly, somehow or other, focus your life's activities around that person. So that is the idea of Krishna consciousness. This devotional service is a science to somehow or other bring our mind, body, words, intelligence in such a way that they're always directed towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we may not have or not experience love in our service for Krishna, but that's okay. Even if we don't feel love, still we should try to offer service. And by that service, gradually we will start to feel a natural attraction for Krishna through the idea of service. Because Krishna creates the attraction for himself. When he's pleased with your service, he actually reveals himself to you. And as he reveals himself to you, you become attracted. And then you lose your attraction for the mundane things of this world. The mundane things of this world we're attracted to. These are natural. It's due to our association from so many lifetimes. And there are sources of attraction, pleasure, attachments. But these things fall away naturally as we gradually focus our attention and concentration on Krishna. So Prabhupada has written so many books. We read these books. We do devotional service. We chant the holy names of the Lord.
24 hours a day, focus your mind on God.
And that way you become God conscious like that. Immediately you lose your attraction for the one thing.
So this is Krishna consciousness.
Sarvabhauma kahe acharya kahe swabhadane tomate ishvara kripa kite ki pramane.
Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya replied, "My dear Gopinath Acharya, please speak with great care. What is the proof that you have received the mercy of the Lord?"
Acharya kaha vastu visaye hoi vastu jnana vastu tattva jnana hoi kripate pramana.
Gopinath Acharya replied, "Knowledge of the Supreme Lord, the Absolute Truth, is evidence of the mercy of the Supreme Lord."
Purport. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya informed his brother-in-law, Gopinath Acharya, "The Supreme Lord may not have shown mercy to me, but what is the proof of his having shown it to you? Kindly let me know about this." In reply to this, Gopinath Acharya said that the Sunam Bonam, the Absolute Truth, and his different potencies are identical. Therefore, one can understand the substance of the Absolute Truth by the manifestation of his different potencies. The Sunam Bonam includes all potencies in one unit. The Absolute Truth, combined with different characteristics, is the original substance, Vastu, Parashya Shakti Virahaya Suyate. Thus, the Vedas state that the Absolute Truth has different potencies. When one understands the characteristics of the potencies of the Absolute Truth, one is also aware of the Absolute Truth. On the material platform as well, one can understand the substance